Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
The McNeil and Parkins Show.
670 The Score in Chicago. Shout out to you guys, McNeil and Parkins. Love you guys.
Afternoons on The Score.
This is the Forum, where the basketball is being played in these 1984 Olympic Games, and tonight the gold medal game matches the undefeated United States against Spain. It'll be Alford, Ewing, and Robertson, Jordan, and Perkins. Joe Klein of Arkansas in the ball game comes off with a rebound. He's played like a dynamo since he came in. And the final score, the United States 96 and Spain 65. The U.S. has its ninth gold medal.
Ellison was shadowing Bird, and Bird got the shot over the top of Ellison, and Joe Klein just came storming in.
And center, 7 foot from Arkansas, Joe Klein.
Hey, the tacos are back on now.
Joe Klein.
Taco Joe.
We love you on our
taco. Yeah, baby. He just took a bite out of the taco. That's what he's doing.
Never it down.
Look at Joe, big smile on his face.
The Chicago Bulls have won their sixth NBA championship, and it's their second three-peat.
The McNeil and Parkins Show, afternoons on The Score.
A hell of a career, and we are looking forward to talking to him. He was a member of The Last Dance, the 97-98 Bulls. Also, as you heard, Michael Jordan's teammate in the 1984 Olympics. And, man, you go over this guy's basketball reference page and the guys he played with and the games he saw, I'm sure he's got a lot of stories to tell, which is why he's now on the McNeil and Parkins Show by way of the Altamonte Ford Hotline. Very pleased to be welcomed with Joe Klein. Joe, how you doing today?
Good, guys. How are y'all?
We're doing very well. Are you enjoying the documentary?
Good. I am very much. I think, I just like everything about it. I think the things they've shown have been very authentic. It's not covering up anything, and I think it's really showing, the truth. I mean, what they've shown, I think it's been really good.
Yeah, the genuine contempt players had for management has been up front and center, Joe Klein. There's no denying that.
Yeah. I thought that's the best thing. I mean, right out of the chute, I wasn't here for – I was here 1 year, and so – but I just – that was all new to me. I knew it was there, but, you guys know. In every sport, management and players bicker, and there's a little resentment everywhere. So you kind of it's the same old thing. But no, it was a little more than that when I got here. It was pretty intense.
You had played for five different NBA teams before the Bulls. Had you ever seen anything like it was in terms of players and management discontent in your time in the NBA?
No. One of the first days, it's early in the year. I can't remember. I want to say it was preseason, and I was up in the, I think it was called the Berto Center. And just remember sitting in there and just, hearing the comments about if we go 82-0, Phil's not going to be our coach. And I'm just kind of sitting there going, you know, what in the hell have I got myself into? I mean, I just, you know, because, I mean, I had offers to go other places, and now all of a sudden I was sitting in there, and, you know, I took a one-year minimum deal. You know, not that people were beating the door down to come get me, but, I mean, you know, I chose to be a part of that. I wanted to have a chance to win a title, and I just, you know, I remember, you know, I'm sitting there and Scotty's not going to be coming back till the first of the year. And then, you know, that comment about 82-0, and I'm just like, good grief. You know, what, like I said, what have I gotten myself into? But it all turned out really good.
It sure did. Joe, watching all these clips from different eras too, it's amazing how much Michael's contempt for Jerry Krause fueled him. They show him pitching quarters with a buddy, and they're arguing over the wager, and he says, like, negotiating with Krause. Was this something that existed almost on a daily basis? You guys couldn't go on a bus ride without either Jordan or Pippen popping off about Jerry?
Well, I mean, it wasn't there all the time, but, you know, unfortunately for Jerry, whom I really liked. I mean, I liked Jerry. He was really good to me, and he's a good guy. And I hope that he somehow gets portrayed a little bit better than what he's being portrayed. But mostly when he was around, that's kind of when, I mean, they didn't get on it all the time, but like when he was around, or like that one time after the Seattle game, you know, you came walking out and he never rode the bus with us. So, you know, I saw him sitting up there, and for some reason that time he had to ride the bus with us. You know, Phil sitting right across the aisle from him. And again, I'm a guy that's just been there, but I knew getting onto that bus, that wasn't a good idea. You know, I mean, it just, the tension, you could feel it. I mean, just, you know, him being on the bus was not a good idea.
Joe, how would you like... Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Danny.
I think we are going in the exact same direction. We're talking to Joe Klein, member of the 97-98 Bulls. How would you like to see Jerry Krause portrayed that he maybe hasn't been so far?
Well, I mean, you know, again, I find it hard to believe. And I mean, I get it. You know, you want to rebuild and do that. But I find it hard to believe that he was doing all this on his own without, you know, ownership, without, I mean, the Bulls are a good organization. They have smart people there that still do. And it always baffled me how he was just kind of singled out, that nobody else. And that was the thing that was kind of odd to me, is that, you know, there's no accountability on anybody else wanting to break this up. It's like, hey, Jay wants to get rid of Michael, Scotty, Dennis and Phil, and we're okay with that. And nobody's like in the room raising their hand going, you know, hey, I got a question over here. You know, is there a way we can keep this? So, and I think, you know, he didn't bring Michael in there, which obviously is the, you know, the cornerstone and the centerpiece of everything. But, you know, pretty much everybody else he assembled, you know, Scotty, Horace, Bill, Pax. I mean, I don't know if he had Pax there, but Pax might have already been there. But I mean, he assembled some pretty good talent, and you know, he was the one who, you know, stepped out and hired Phil. So I just hope some of those things, again, some things were said, and the management of it at the end was really bad. But you know, there were a lot of good things that happened. Before that, you know, I didn't get to be a part of, but, you know, he certainly had a part in it, as everybody did.
Joe, was there ever a conversation among the players, hey, this is above Jerry Krause. Let's send a representative in to talk to Jerry Reinsdorf and see if we can keep this thing going?
I don't remember anything like that. I mean, I think, you know, Reinsdorf and Jordan talked a lot, so I think that anything that needed to be said was said by the man to the man. So, I mean, I don't think, you know, guys like me or anybody else had the clout to really move forward and do anything like that. And, you know, I'm sure Phil and Scotty and Michael had numerous conversations with Jerry Reinsdorf. So, I don't think anything by the rest of us would have amounted to much.
Hey, Joe, who was the better trash-talking teammate, Larry Bird or Michael Jordan?
Well, the thing, I mean, they both were really good. I mean, they were really good. I liked Larry a little bit better because Michael was trying to rip your heart out, you know, just openly. And Larry would try to do the same, but he would, you know, whisper it to you or, you know, say something real quiet to the bench. Larry talked a lot of trash, but he did it more subtly than anybody I knew in the league. I mean, he was just, he'd make these, you know, he has a great sense of humor, and he would, you know, he would make these comments just, you know, leaning down on the free throw line, you know, you're grabbing your shorts and he grabs his shorts and then he just starts ripping the dude, you know, that nobody else can hear it. Whereas Michael would do the same, but I thought his was a little more out front and open. And I mean, you know, the thing that I liked about Larry was, like, I'd get in the car after the game, you know, and I'd be riding home with my wife, and I'd say, you know, remember that play Larry did? She goes, yeah. So you wouldn't believe what he said to the dude on the way back down the floor. You know, I mean, that was the kind of stuff that was kind of, you felt like you were on the inside of something that nobody else knew about, where, again, like I said earlier, I thought Michael was great at it, but I think he was, you know, a little more in your face, which, you know, that's a shocker for everybody.
Right.
What did he say to the opponent running down the floor? Can you tell us, Joe?
You know, I mean, I'm trying to think of a PG version.
Yeah.
You know, stuff like, I can't, you know, just, you know, like, you know, you'd be over there by the bench or something, just, you know, I cannot believe. And he just keep on saying, I cannot believe. I cannot believe your coaches or that blanky blank stupid that they're gonna have you guard me. You know, just stuff like that. You know, just, I'm getting ready to, you know, this next time down the floor, we're gonna run this play. I'm gonna post up right over here, and, you know, I'm gonna shoot a turnaround jumper over my left shoulder. Just, you know, this little, saying it real quickly and quietly. You know, just and then doing it, and then just, you know, just nonchalantly running down the floor, and then you watch the guy guarding him, which a couple times, you know, when I was an opponent of his, was me. And, you know, just frustrated that, you know, you knew what was coming, but there wasn't a damn thing you could do about it. That's, you know, that's with all the great players. That was Michael. That was all of them. I mean, they just, when they had it going, you were at their mercy.
We're talking to Joe Klein, McNeil and Parkins, on the Score, member of the 97-98 Bulls, a longtime NBA player. Were you ever on the receiving end of one of Michael Jordan's infamous practice tirades?
You know, I'm sure I was. I was with Michael in the Olympics, and my dad was a Marine in World War II, and so, you know, I played with Bobby Knight, with Michael, and Eddie Sutton. So, I mean, I guarantee, you know, he went at everybody one time or the other. But, I mean, to me, it was like, whatever. You know, it wasn't anything that really bothered me. I mean, and I respected him because, you know, whenever he went off on somebody, it was more of a competitive thing, and it was more of a challenging you to play harder, to play tougher. You know, testing you to see if you'd back down. And, you know, I don't ever remember getting in a really big back and forth with him, but I know that I never backed down. I know that. So, I mean, I don't remember anything that was really, you hear about the stuff with Will Perdue and Steve Kerr and all this stuff, but I don't ever recall anything, you know, even close to anything like that with me.
Joe, you had tasted basketball success for a number of years in your life prior to signing with the Bulls in 97-98, but What was different, other than just winning the NBA championship? What made that experience different for you?
Oh, good Lord, it's like joining the Beatles. I mean, it was ridiculous. I mean, I was with Boston, you know, and I was with Charles and Phoenix and Dan Marley and them guys when we were rolling out there. And I mean, you know, we had fans, but I mean, you know, Michael's thing was, it was, you know, just the ultimate, you know, rock show, like going on the tour. I mean, just the number of people that were everywhere all the time, at all hours of the night, or all hours of the morning, just, you know, just screaming and crying. And I mean, you're like, what is, you know, it was just, I mean, I couldn't, you know, like I told y'all earlier, I thought I was, you know, I was coming into something that I was familiar with, but I wasn't even close. I mean, it wasn't even close to the level of, you know, stardom and excitement and people following the team. You know, it was ridiculous.
How much did Rodman contribute to that craziness?
Oh man, he's, you know, Dennis is a cherry on top, man. You know, you got all this craziness going down below, and then we go, let's put some sprinkles and a cherry on this, you know, with Dennis. I mean, you know, he added a little flavor to it that was, you know, it was already crazy. And then he took it, you know, and it was just, you know, basketball and fans and craziness. And then Dennis, you know, you kind of took the fork in the road a little bit and went a little different direction with his stuff and his fans and his people. So, I mean, I think he added spice to it, made it a little different. It wasn't just a traditional basketball crazy fans. You know, Dennis brought a different element, you know, with the hair and the style and all the stuff that he did, the partying that he did, I mean, and the people that were around him. I mean, it just, again, it was like the, you know, the seasoning on the dish. He finished it off.
Joe, was the game better back then before guys just started chucking threes 30 times a night?
Well, I mean, I'm an old head. I don't want to sound like I don't want to sound like the guy that's sitting on his porch yelling, "Get off my yard!" Uh-huh. You know, but but the thing I like about, again, and I'm not saying this, I think players today are just, I think they can play in that era, and I think vice versa. You know, everybody says players in our era were tougher. And maybe so, but that's not because of the makeup of the player. It's the way the game was coached. The game was refereed. You know, from high school on up, it was a different game. It was an inside-out game instead of an outside-in game. So, you know, that's how you train. That's how you practice. That's how you, you know, you did all these things to play this way so you could make it to the highest level. I like the game better then than now, because to me, a lot of times when I watch it, I feel like everybody's trying to do the same thing. You know, there's no trying to get the ball into Ewing versus, you know, trying to play, you know, somebody trying to inflict their desire or inflict their game plan on another team to make them play a different way that is more advantageous to that particular team. So I get sometimes where, you know, you watch it now and, you know, it's so, you know, pick and roll, drive, kick the three, you know, you don't have any patterns and actions. And I mean, I get it with the analytics and everything. I mean, you can't deny it, but it just, there's not enough different ways, you know, teams playing differently than now as it was then, in my opinion. So I liked it better just because it had big guys playing, you had great guards, great point guards, great shooters, and everything was implemented. Now it just seems like, you know, everybody wants to shoot the three, and a lot of parts of the game have been lost, in my opinion.
Another couple of minutes with Joe Klein, then we'll talk to Dave Wannstedt in 10 minutes to remember Don Shula. Joe's a member of the 97-98 Bulls, and also a teammate, as he mentioned, of Michael Jordan on the 84 Olympic team. I thought the footage that they had in one of the earlier episodes from that team of Bob Knight saying that Michael was the best athlete he had ever seen play basketball, like that's an incredible amount of praise so early in Michael's career, 1984. Did hearing Bob Knight say that surprise you, and what do you remember about Michael Jordan in 1984?
I remember, you know, everybody knew that he was the man on the 84 team. I mean, there was no denying that. And everybody knew that he was going to be a multiple all-star years. Nobody saw what was coming. I mean, you couldn't see what he was getting ready to do coming. I mean, there's just no way. Again, knew he was going to be an all-star for years, going to be a great NBA pro, but to see what was coming, I mean, I didn't see it. I mean, I didn't see it at all. Again, and I knew it was going to be great, but even he took it to another level. So hearing Coach Knight say that, you know, that kind of shows his insight, and he obviously had seen a lot more players and been around a lot more great players than I had. So for him to say that, when I heard that, I mean, I hadn't heard that before. I don't remember seeing that. That kind of, you know, raised my eyebrows a little bit. For him to have said it then shows great foresight on his ability to evaluate.
You enjoy your time with Bob Knight?
I did. I mean, like I said, you know, I grew up with a Marine running my household. So, you know, I mean, he wasn't getting nothing, you know. I mean, I could take it, you know. So, I mean, I was cool with it. I mean, I had no problem with it. I mean, I was playing for Coach Sutton, who was strict too and hard, and so he wasn't, you know, he wasn't going to break me down and hurt me. And I liked playing for him. I liked that kind of coaching, and so I didn't have a problem with it at all.
Joe, this might be a personal question, but you were in the film Eddie with Whoopi Goldberg. I'm curious, what are those residual checks like? What are those residual checks looking like these days?
I got one. I'm not kidding you. I got one 2 weeks ago. Guess how much it was.
How much?
I got one 2 weeks, 53 cents.
Oh, goodness, not even enough for a Coke at Corky's Barbecue.
Yeah, we don't have nothing on our menu you can get for 53 cents. But I got a check. I've gotten to where I don't even cash them anymore. I just get such a kick out of keeping them. I haven't had one over a dollar in about 5 years. I'm very disappointed.
Joe, we're looking at around 8 weeks now with restaurants closed in Chicago. Everybody's getting carry out or doing it themselves. Give our audience a key to good ribs. What's the secret to making a good rack of ribs?
Oh, man, you know, basting, smoke, you know, slow cooking. Just, you know, you don't want to rush it. And, you can't rush it, man. You gotta get the smoke going. The temperature's gotta be low, and then you gotta baste it and keep them moist. And you do that, and you'll like what comes out. It might, you know, there's a lot of different ways to do it, but to me, that's the key.
Low and slow. I hear you.
Low and slow. I hear you, bro. It's kind of like my NBA at my scouting report.
That's good. All right, so Carolina barbecue, Memphis barbecue, Texas barbecue, Kansas City barbecue. Power rank them.
Ooh, well, I grew up right outside of Kansas City, and Arthur Bryant's is like my St. Peter's, you know, in the Basilica in Rome. So that's
my man.
That's my. You know, I grew up on that, but I love Memphis style. You know, I mean, I've never really had anything that I've taken a bite of at anywhere and said, you know, I'm not going to finish this. I usually finish it, and I'm not disappointed. So, but I mean, I grew up with Arthur Bryant's and then getting involved with Corky's. I love both of those. Those are my two favorites.
Joe, this was fun. Thank you very much for the time and the stories, guys. And enjoy the documentary, all right?
Thanks, Joe. Good stuff.
I am. Thanks.
Take care, man.
Good talking to you guys. Be careful.
All right. You as well.
Thanks,
that's Joe Klein from the 97-98 team. He's involved with Corky's Barbecue for anyone who's confused as to why the conversation ended there.
Yeah, it was good stuff. I enjoyed Joe. You're right. Sometimes the guys who don't get a lot of sweat out of them during the games might be one of their better guests down the road. That's good stuff.
Yeah. He was on the same plane, right? He's on the same buses.
He saw it all.
He's allowed in the huddle. Just because they were never drawing up plays for him doesn't mean he doesn't have any insight into what the hell it was like.
I love that. Low and slow was his scouting report as a player. That's great.
Just like how you cook ribs. That was very good. One of Dave Wannstedt's coaching mentors was Don Shula, who passed away at the age of 90. Coach Wannstedt will join us to tell stories and remember his mentor, Don Shula, next on The Score.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Arrowhead Stadium was the scene of the opener. Don Shula had set a single goal for the new season: to get his team in the Super Bowl and win it. Only 7 years since Joe Robbie was granted a franchise in the old AFL, Miami not only won the Super Bowl, but had gone an entire season undefeated. A feat no other NFL team in history has accomplished. It is unlikely ever to happen again. As the triumphant Miami Dolphins returned from Super Bowl VII, a throng of thousands gave a winner's welcome to the team, Coach Don Shula, and owner Joe Robbie.
This is the Vince Lombardi Trophy for the winner of the Super Bowl.
RIP to the winningest coach in NFL history, Don Shula, passing away at the age of 90. 33 seasons in the NFL, only 2 years with a losing record, 347 wins, the most all time, and of course the historic undefeated Dolphins team. Joining us now to remember the late great football coach, one of his many mentors and coaching influences, our friend Dave Wannstedt on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Coach, how you doing today?
I'm doing okay. I was just listening to the highlights there with the Super Bowl and Coach Shula and the Dolphins and everything that went along with it. And then those stats, you know, the interesting thing about his legacy to me is, yes, you talk about the Super Bowl and you talk about the undefeated season, but to be as good as his teams were and as good as he was for as many years as he was, 33 years, as a head coach, I mean, to me, with all the pressures and the changes
that go on in this game, you know, having witnessed them myself, I mean, that's what probably may not really be appreciated by a normal fan. You know, they look at the undefeated season, the Super Bowls, and leave it at that. But there's a lot more that Coach Shula did than probably has really ever talked about.
Dave, I look at a couple of different Super Bowl eras from the Dolphins. The early years, they were led by what they called the no-name defense, and there weren't many stars. Maybe Nick Bonacani, the biggest on their defense, and then later in the 80s with the Killer Bees, and that's something I always admired about Shula's Dolphins. They won on defense by deploying the team aspect, and I know he might have been the first coach to do in practice. Nobody stops when you're scrimmaging until all 11 defenders get to the football. I don't know where you first heard that, but I loved his teams defensively as much as I did anything else.
Yeah, they were, you know, and I became good friends with Kim Bocamper down there and some of the Dolphin player, Manny Fernandez, some of the guys that played on those teams and had a chance to talk firsthand about their teams. Yeah, it was always about the team with Coach Shula, you know, and the one thing that, When you say Coach Shula, you think Dan Marino, rightfully so. But do you realize he won that one Super Bowl? And we'll forget Danny there to look up the numbers. But how many times did he throw the ball with that one Super Bowl with Bob Greasy? 8 times, maybe 9 times in the whole game, and it was Kick and Zonka and Murky Morse, and they were a running beat you up team. And I had. Playing the Hall of Fame game when I was coaching the Dolphins, I had Larry Zonka come by and talk to our team. And then afterwards, Larry and I had dinner and spent a lot of time just talking about the mentality. And we really got to the transition of, you know, this was a pound-em football team, a physical football team. And then with Dan Marino, you know, I could talk for hours about, Coach Shula. But you remember the Bears? We went down there and played them. And you have to look this up, too. They're wonderful to me, but I can't remember the year, but they had not lost to an NFC team in Miami since 1988, after when we went down there. And we went down there to Miami to play them, and I remember on the sidelines, I'm talking to Coach Shula, and it had just rained, and Dan Marino's over there throwing like he can throw. You know, he's just throwing rockets. You would never have even known that it rained out. And Steve Walsh was our quarterback. Eric was hurt. And Steve's trying to throw out patterns to Jeff Graham or Curtis Conway. And my only thought was, I'm standing on our sideline talking to Coach Shula, and I was fearful that Steve was going to hit him in the back of the head with the ball, because the balls were going everywhere except to our receivers. And we get into the game, and I remember the game plan, and I said, you know what we're going to do? I said, we're gonna play a 3 down lineman scheme the entire game until Dan Marino decides to run the ball. Now, I knew, that's my point, is Coach Shula believed in running the football because he did it with Zonk and Kick. Well, we go into this game, and you can look it up, and we're playing a 3 down lineman scheme. And I remember Trace Armstrong, you know, saying, Coach, we're out of our minds. I says, you know what? We'll get out of this scheme when they start running it. And they never really made any attempt to run the ball the whole game. And we ended up beating them. I think it was 17-14 or 17-13 down there in Miami. And so, you know, I guess the point that I'm making is, you know, Coach Shula came running the ball to the other extreme of all pass with Marino. So he made a transition, which a lot of coaches that coach for that long, you know, they don't do that. They don't make that adjustment.
Dave, as Boy Wonder, you gave me a lot to look up there, but I have this one for you to illustrate that point. That 1972 team, right, the Super Bowl team, over their 3 playoff games, 264 passing yards total across all 3 games. But then in 1984, and that was a team that had 2 1,000-yard rushers, who you just mentioned, that was a record at the time. Then by 84, he's got a quarterback in Dan Marino, who was the first quarterback to throw for 5,000 yards. So he coached record-setting running game, and then he coached record-setting passing game. It's fairly remarkable that he was able to make that transformation, like you said. I was going back over your guys' tie-ins, and I didn't realize that you were hired by Don Shula, but you only coached for him for 6 weeks before you ended up going with Jimmy Johnson. Like, what? Can you tell that
you
story? Because you've never told that story on our show before.
You know what, Dan? I'm going to say this. Mac, your boy there is good, okay? Danny, you are good, okay? Because not very few people know that. I don't talk about it much. It's on my resume. But I was coaching with Jimmy at the Hurricanes, and we I guess it was after the 88 season, and we had won, you know, played for a couple national championships, and we were kind of all getting antsy down there. And Chuck Knoll, Coach Knoll, called me up and wanted to know if I would be interested in interviewing for a linebacker job with the Pittsburgh Steelers. So I fly to Pittsburgh, interview with Coach Knoll, and as I'm walking out the door, Coach Knoll says, "Hey, Dave, let me ask you a question. If I was going to call one person in the NFL for reference, who would that be?" Well, God, I'm thinking, you know, I never coached in the league at that time. And I said, "You know what, Coach?" I said, "I haven't missed a mini camp or a training camp in the Dolphins. We drive right up the road and watch them there in Miami." I said, "You could give Coach Shula a call." I said, "You know, I think he knows who I am." And so I go to the Pittsburgh airport, no cell phones, okay, get on a payphone. I call Coach Shula, get a hold of him at his office, and told him that I just interviewed him. If he was if Coach Noel called him, I'd appreciate it. He says, "Fine," he doesn't say any more. 2 days later, he calls me. He says, "Did you ever get that job yet?" And I says, "No." I said he had two other guys he was going to talk to. He says, "Why don't you drive up to my office tonight?" So I get in a car and drive up to his office, and we have – and the defensive coordinator was there, and we sit down, and we have a job interview. I know I let Jimmy know. I called Jimmy, and he was all for it. And Coach Shula offered me the linebacker job at the Dolphins. And he was talking about moving from a 3-4, which they were at that time, to more of a 4-3 scheme that we, you know, that was kind of my deal. And so I'm at the job. Now, think about this. I am working for Don Shula. We don't have to move the family. I'm making a dollar more, I think, a year in a contract. He was tough on the contract. He did not. I didn't get a big pay raise. But I was making a dollar more. I didn't have to move, and I'm coaching in the NFL. Uh-huh. And Jimmy Johnson, that's the time he calls me up, and he says, "Hey, meet me at this place we used to hang out at." And he tells me about that he's going to get the Dallas Cowboy job. And obviously, he took me down there as a defense coordinator, so it was a big joke.
Oh, did we just lose Dave?
Dave?
He's getting to the end of
Coach.
Dave, we lost you for a second. So, but you're getting right to the best part of the story, I assume, is that so Jimmy Johnson gets the Cowboys job. He offers you the defensive coordinator job. You had just been hired to coach linebackers for Coach Shula. Pick it up from there, please.
So it was a big promotion. So Coach Shula let me out of my contract. And, you know, I don't want to get into the Cowboys stuff now, but that's for another day. But I go to Dallas, but I was with Coach Shula long enough to sit in enough staff meetings with him. And it was kind of funny. And this is a funny story because our offices then were at a place called St. Thomas University, a Catholic school right there. And that's where the practice field was, practice facility for the Dolphins for a bunch of years. And it was a chapel right there on campus. And Coach Shula, you know, being Catholic, he would go to Mass in the morning. And when he would walk back over, he would walk in and we would start our staff meeting. So he comes into one staff meeting and he sits down and he said something about a player that jumped off sides. Why is this guy always jump off sides? And one of the assistant coaches in the meeting said, "Well, Coach, it's only a 5-yard penalty." And he came out of his chair and he said, "There's no such thing as a small penalty. That's how you get your blah, 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 butt kick. That's why you'll never, blah, 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 blah." And he's going up and down this assistant coach. And I'm looking out the window and I'm looking at my watch saying, "Was he just in church 10 minutes ago?" You know, because it was up and down. And I mean, he was tough now and he could talk. He was a street tough guy. He was a man's man. There's no question about that. But, you know, the whole thing was perfection. Again, perfection. There's no such thing as a small penalty and a few choice words to go along with it after daily mass. Nothing better.
Dave, you are confirming my perception of him. Years ago, we had a promotion. We were at an affiliation with his restaurants and had him in the studio a handful of times. And always class personified. Always a gentleman. Always very accommodating. But I had heard that from his players that if you think he's a choir boy, you are sorely mistaken because he can be an SOB as well.
Oh, no. As tough as they come, trust me. And, you know, Mike, you, Danny Mack, you might remember Mike Shula, his son, who's now at Denver. When I got the Bears job, I hired Mike. Mike was kind of an offensive assistant at the time. He had just graduated from Alabama, and he was working as an offensive assistant for his dad at the Dolphins. And I hired Mike to come to the Bears, and Mike coached the tight ends for the Bears for, I don't know, 5-6 years. And then when I got the Dolphins job, I hired Mike down there to be my quarterback coach with Jane Gailey. So, you know, I have a good rapport with the Shula family. And you know, when I was coaching the Dolphins, Coach Shula would come to the games, and it was tough because at that time, and what's it, 10, 11, 12 years ago, and he was, you know, he was in a wheelchair then, and he would come to the games on Sunday, and he was having a tough time walking and getting around, and boy, it was just, you know, just tough seeing him in that light. But he was there, and he was rooting us on, and he was into it. Hell, he was, there was no question about that.
What do Shula and the Dolphins mean to the people of Miami?
Well, you know what, my all of South Florida, and I'm going to say this in a positive way. You know, I've coached at the Bucs, I've coached at the Hurricanes, I've coached at the Dolphins. So I live here. So I know the culture down here in South Florida associated with sports, all sports. And down here, it's so different than Chicago or so different than Pittsburgh, where most of your fans down here, the Dolphin fans, are not born and carried out of the hospital wearing a Dolphins jersey like they are in Chicago or Pittsburgh. You know, you got so many people moving in and out of this state that it's very difficult to build a loyal fan group. And Coach Shula, you know, he was able to do that and build the foundation for the Miami Dolphins. And, I mean, when I was the head coach down there at the Dolphins, guys, we had 63,000 season tickets. Our, you know, old pro player held, what, 72 or 75? But we had 60, when Ricky Williams was, we were in the peak, we had 63,000 season tickets. And I think that's a credit going back to Coach Shula with the foundation and the great tradition and the legacy that he established down there.
It's kind of amazing, too. I mean, just never leaving. You know, 26 years as the Dolphins coach, that's, I mean, Belichick with the Patriots, I guess, but he had the stops before that. It feels like something that might not be able to be matched in, like, the present football NFL culture, both his wins record and his tenure at one place.
Absolutely. No, because you're not going to have the players aren't going to stay that long and the business side of it'll never be matched again. Never be matched again. And you know, his wife, you know, Mike Shula used to tell me that his dad, you know, Mike's first wife who passed away with cancer, I believe it was, Dorothy, she was, when she was real sick, Don was sleeping in the hospital. And then he would come to meetings the next day. And then when she was in the hospital with some of her treatments, he would come home from the office and have dinner. Mike told me the stories. His dad would show up for dinner and then leave and go back to the office to make sure that all the kids and everything was in order. So, I mean, he wore, you know, you talk about, you know, your faith in football and family. I mean, he wore it on his sleeve, and it was important to him. It truly was. It's not just lip service like a lot of guys like to give it.
Hey, Parkins, you know how Dave has liked to joke about the young buck who coaches in the NFL, Sean McVay, wearing his good-fitting, you know, tight-fitting Under Armour and Matt LaFleur. Don Shula, who dies at the age of 90, was the original boy wonder. The Baltimore Colts hired him in 1963, He was 33 years old at that time, the youngest coach ever to get an NFL head coaching opportunity. And, man, I don't know how a guy's ready for that at 33, but Shula did all right with it. And a few years later, the Colts were in the Super Bowl as big favorites and lost. But nonetheless, the original boy wonder was Don Shula. Hard to imagine that now.
How about that? Yeah, and it's I'll tell you what, though, Danny did good today. Boy, you come up with some good stuff. Wow. Wow.
That's my little buddy.
Why should today be different than any other day, Dave? Come on now.
Yeah,
you grow to expect
right.
It by now.
I did give you a couple of layups today, though. Come on, be honest with me. I gave you a couple of layups.
Yeah, you were very generous, but I only had one thing to research for the interview, your connection to Don Shula. And when I found that, I was like, oh, damn, I've never heard that story before.
And you know what? I've had a lot of calls today and a lot of people wanting to talk about this. And I've done two or three things today. And I brought that story up and people were saying, what? You're kidding me. We thought, you know, they were just trying to tie the connection and me being a head coach there and coach being a head coach there. But no, they had no idea. So you're way out in front of the majority for sure. You're in that 1%, that top echelon.
Wow! Thank you, Dave. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
How you holding up, man? In these unprecedented, uncertain quarantine times, how you doing with it?
Well, all I'm gonna tell you is I was in a traffic jam coming down Fifth Avenue tonight because every restaurant on the city's open now in Florida, geez. And they're playing golf and. I've got grandkids here, and we were over to beach last night for about 4 hours. So things are moving real fast down here in Florida. Now, hopefully it's a good move. You know what I mean? I mean, we're saying our prayers on that end of it. But, no, we're in, I think they call it phase one of this, you know, get back to normalcy. And we'll see where it goes. But, no, everything is pretty close to going here again.
Well. Good luck.
Good luck with that.
I hope it works.
I don't know. Did you want a bad story? I mean,
no,
I'm not
no,
no,
not, not at
you?
All. Not, no,
what do you
not,
want me to tell you? You know, the sun's out. You want me to tell you it's going to rain down here? The sun's out. I'm looking out the window. What do you want me to tell you?
We'll see how it goes.
Sorry for being positive. You know, my knee's doing good.
Not at all. It was just
okay.
I hope it works out. Enjoy the beach.
Okay, well, next time, let's recall. We'll talk Mitch Trubisky and Nick Foles. There you go. We'll get that going again.
I don't want to do that.
Dave,
all
you're
right,
the best.
Dave.
Thank you.
All right, guys. See ya.
We'll see ya. Oh, that's great.
Mac, I asked the question, and as I am like 85% through the question, I realize in my brain, oh, no, he's in Florida.
Yeah.
Like they're handling it very differently.
Yeah, I know. We both groaned, too. You can tell we both were groaning. He doesn't need the prayers. Well, just little prayers. I think we need more than the prayers of the 2nd Congressional District to get this thing licked.
Yeah, and Dave's like, oh, you guys are rooting for negativity? No, it's not that at all. I absolutely hope they're right in Florida. I really, really do. I tend to be more conservative when it comes to deadly viruses, I guess. I don't know.
General rule, go ahead and salute it. General rule, I bet against Florida.
Right. Yeah. Florida's the underdog when it comes to common sense, historically. So,
Wani was just brilliant in his NFL head coaching tenure. I mean, his travels. He follows Ditka with the Bears. And then later with the Dolphins, he follows Jimmy Johnson, who had followed Don Shula. He needed a Richie Kotite along the way somewhere. He needed a Ray Handley, some punching bag to give him where anything would have been an upgrade. He had nowhere to go but down with those guys.
Tough acts to follow for sure, and a hell of a story with him and Don Shula. I'm glad he told it. So I don't exactly know what to make of this, Mac. Trevor Plouffe on Twitter, Major League Baseballer, tweets, "You want some good baseball news? I just heard from multiple sources that on June 10th, spring training 2 will start. July 1st will be opening day, and all teams will be playing at their home ballparks." So that is obviously a massive scoop, but he's got people in his mentions who, you know, are also professional baseball players. Jack Flaherty, that's news to me. We've got Phil Hughes, who says, I made that up. So
I'm Phil Hughes.
I don't know what to do with this. Tanny, how should I be interpreting Trevor Plouffe saying that he heard spring training 2 is June 10th, July 1st is opening day? We taking this at face value here?
I don't know. Maybe we can mull it over during a break.
You are the absolute
That's
worst.
My guy. I love it.
It's McNeil and Parkins on the Score.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 40% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 40% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.